Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. How much do you know about the animal cruelty laws on the books in your state? And are the laws that are in effect implemented as intended and taken seriously by prosecutors and judges? Well, in one recent survey of the effectiveness of animal welfare protection laws, the Humane Society of the United States ranked California number one, and Massachusetts and Illinois were tied for number two. At the very bottom were Idaho and South Dakota. And in 2011, the Animal Legal Defense Fund published their survey and highlighted the worst performers in the country, which were Idaho, South Dakota, North Dakota, Kentucky, and Iowa. These were named the best states to be an animal abuser. So I would urge you to go to both of those websites to see how your state ranks and where improvements could be made, and find out which legislators are really working for animals and their people. And there continues to be growing interest in laws related to animal abuse, particularly as the epidemic of school shootings continues. Because we know that many of the notorious mass murderers were former abusers of animals, and that frequently abuse of animals precedes violent acts towards people, right? Now, in a moment, we'll be joined by a dedicated and courageous Connecticut lawmaker, Diana Urban, to learn about what is happening in her state in the effort against animal abuse. Later in the show, Eric Mills from Action for Animals will come on to tell us about animal abuse at the California State Fair. Even though California ranks high, there's always more work to be done. Also, Peter has some news items, so you're going to want to stay with us today. Now, I'm very happy to welcome to the show from Connecticut's 43rd Assembly District, Representative Diana Urban. She is the recipient of the 2013 HSUS Legislator of the Year Award, and as you will learn, a very dedicated advocate for animals. Welcome, Representative Urban.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be with you because, as everybody knows, this is a subject that is so close to my heart.
Thank you. Diana, we became aware of your work related to a bill you have introduced in Connecticut to place advocates for animals in the courtrooms for certain cases. Can you briefly describe what the bill says?
Absolutely. This bill is 6690, an act concerning court proceedings and protection of animals. And what we're looking at, and you sort of talked about it to begin with, but if you look from 1997 to 2001, the seven school shootings that took place during that time, nationwide, virtually every one of those shooters started with criminal activity involving animal abuse. For instance, Kip Kinkle put firecrackers in cats' mouths and watched them blow up before he decided he needed to kill his parents and go to Thurston High School and kill two and wound 12. I think everybody knows that Columbine duo were maiming animals and bragging about it before they went to their high school and killed 12 and wounded 24. The problem is that we don't take animal abuse seriously as a red flag for future violent behavior. FBI has recognized it since 1971, but honestly, I don't understand why the courts don't take it seriously. In Connecticut, we have a statistic of 3,996 cases of animal abuse, of which 16% resulted in any kind of conviction. The rest of them were accelerated rehab or nollied. And if you're familiar with that, that means their records basically are erased. And with those records being erased is our chance to intercede and possibly save our children.
So what will the bill do?
The bill is so awesome, and it took a lot of it was a lot of thought and a lot of brainstorming. What the bill does mm-hmm. is it places an animal advocate in the court. So there is a person there saying, this particular animal, and I'll take a case in Connecticut. There was a case where a guy was uptight about his girlfriend. He took his puppy and stabbed the puppy 29 times. The puppy actually lived. But when there's an animal advocate in court, the animal advocate will talk about the brutality of the attack. We'll talk about exactly where that dog got stabbed. We'll talk about the injuries that were incurred by the dog. And then we'll also bring to the court's attention the fact that the next step that this person possibly will take will be directed at a child, at a domestic partner, or perhaps at a mass shooting at a school. This is an indicator for real mental instability that leads to violent behavior. We can't say that every person that has mental health issues is going to go on and be a horrible person. That's just not true. But a person that does this to an animal, yes, we do know that there's a very direct correlation to they're going to pursue more violence against helpless children or domestic partner. The very cool part of this is that we have talked with UConn Law School, and the animal advocates will be UConn law students, and we will offer it to any law student in Connecticut, Yale, Quinnipiac, and I mean, I'm sure that we'll be happy to accept any, you know, New England law student who has close enough proximity to do it. So that law student will get experience in court. There will be no cost to the state of Connecticut, and our Department of Agriculture will be keeping that list. And in a wonderful, wonderful thing, five attorneys have already stepped up and said if there's a law student not available because it's a vacation or something, these five attorneys stepped up and said, we'll do it pro bono. So, come on, how cool is this?
Yeah, that's really fantastic. Diana, you give a press conference and say it at one point, I'm going to pick up somebody. And you reach to the ground to lift up and then to introduce a medium-sized dog named Indiana Jones. Did you mean to say somebody?
I probably did, you know, because I think that, I think that's probably one of the things that we're uncomfortable with is
right.
that we like to see the world as sort of man-centered, and we're not comfortable with the fact that there is a great big environment out there that we depend on, and that actually the animals are part of that web of life, and that we really need to pay attention to the entire web of life. And, you know, honestly, I think anybody that has animals watches them and knows that they have their own thing going on, that they're sentient beings. They're not automatons. So it's interesting. You know what? I didn't even realize that I had said that. So there you go.
Well, you sounded very natural, and as if, like we speak here on Animals Today, as this living creature is an individual, an actual
exactly.
individual person. So that was very, very cute. Now, you spoke about the animal abuse and interpersonal violence connection, and you also recited statistics concerning the past history of school shooters. Tell us about domestic violence, not just mass killings, and how it relates to animal abuse as well.
I have a list of cases which are, it's so distressing. Actual cases in Connecticut that have taken place where the precursor to the domestic violence is violence against the animal. And in one instance that I was actually working with these people, the husband was using a pet rabbit to control the wife and the children, and he one time got so incensed that he strangled the rabbit in front of the kids. The mom wasn't there, and he said, you know, this is what's going to happen to everybody if people don't do what I say. And initially, we couldn't adjudicate it because the rabbit was not considered a pet. It was considered a farm animal until I got into it, and I said, no, wait a second. No, that rabbit was a pet. That rabbit's not a farm animal. So,
yeah.
In essence, we were able to actually bring that forward, but he never got in trouble over the animal abuse. It was disorderly conduct or behavior, which was absurd, and he, you know, the penalty was ridiculously low, and of course those children are scarred for life.
Yeah. Diana, we only have a few seconds left. What is the history of having an animal, an advocate for animals in court? Do we see advocates in other states or in other countries?
The only state that did this was Rhode Island. Rhode Island did it last session, and I saw it, and I went, wow, And I thought, we can do this in Connecticut. And the only thing that I changed was I made it our own law students. They have the, I believe the veterinarians are their advocates, but I know how incredibly busy our veterinarians are.
Yeah.
So I thought, why not give our law students at UConn or, you know, Yale or Quinnipiac, this experience in court? And to UConn's credit, their dean stepped up in a heartbeat and said, yes,
wow.
Absolutely,
okay.
We'll do it.
Don't go away. More with Connecticut Representative Diana Urban right here on Animals Today. Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows, and you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com. Also, make sure to become a friend on Facebook. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. And I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics, and we certainly would appreciate your support. That website again is aianimals.org. And thanks for listening. Welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Representative Diana Urban. Diana, how are the judges failing to do their jobs in animal cases?
Now, this is a conundrum to me. I don't understand why they don't feel comfortable recognizing this link and acting on it. But it seems very clear to me that there are some judges who do feel comfortable doing it and others that don't. And I don't know whether that's a function of age, or it's a function of a philosophic difference. So I'm flummoxed as on that one, totally.
Yeah. Now, for those of you just tuning in, we're referring to the bill HB 6690, which would put an animal advocate in the court to give animals a voice. Diana, does this legislation imply or require greater rights for non-human animals?
No, it really doesn't. What this is about is recognizing that this animal cruelty is a red flag. We looked at, God help us, what happened here in Connecticut. And we're saying, how do we know? Is there an early warning system that somebody might do what they did at Sandy Hook? And I feel like, you know, I'm waving in the back of the room. I'm like, yes, for 13 years I've been telling you there's an early warning. It's animal cruelty and animal abuse, and we know it.
What happens to the animal abusers when they're followed over time? Is it possible to rehabilitate them?
Well, you know, that's the terrible part, because they get accelerated rehabilitation or the cases get nollied, so the record gets expunged. So we don't know. Now, the ones we do know that we have seen, unfortunately, we haven't really put them into treatment programs, which is another bill that I did like 6 years ago. And I think that if we put them into treatment programs early, perhaps we could figure out why they had this anger and this control problem.
So what's the status of this legislation right now?
It's on its way to the Environment Committee. If it comes out of Environment, it will go to the floor. And I must say, there is a lot of bipartisan support, and a shout out to anybody to call their legislator and tell them to co-sponsor Rep. Urban's bill.
Fantastic. And so tell me about Governor Dan Malloy. He's a lawyer. What does he say about this legislation like this?
I've had no pushback from the gov's office at all. So I'm assuming that the governor is good with the bill, particularly with what has happened in Sandy Hook. And that's why I use this opportunity to say, this is the time. Don't blow this off. We can get an early recognition in these cases And maybe, just maybe, we will save some children or some school. And even if we save one, because we have UConn law students in court advocating for animals at no cost to the state, even if we save one, we've done our job.
Very good. And before we move on to another bill that you're working on, just please repeat, what can Connecticut residents do to help you pass this legislation? And people who do not live in Connecticut, can they meaningfully support this legislation?
Absolutely. If you live in Connecticut, go to the General Assembly website, click on Find Your Legislator, and when you find your legislator, you email them or you call them and say, I want an animal advocate in court because I want to protect children and animals. If you're from out of state, write some letters to the editors here. Say, yeah, you know, we really need to do this. We really need to recognize that this is a cycle of violence.
Good idea. Okay, so now let's move on to another bill you're working on, HB 6465, an act about animal-assisted therapy. Please describe to my listeners that bill.
This is so cool. We put this bill out there and brought together all our animal therapy crisis teams, had a wonderful meeting, and this, of course, came about again because of Sandy Hook. I'm sure everybody was aware of those wonderful, wonderful therapy dogs that were there, but those therapy dogs were from out of state. So once the crisis is sort of over, those dogs leave. So if the child or family has bonded with a particular dog, they can't see them again. And that's when I said, wait a second, I know we have these therapy teams in Connecticut. I know we have crisis response animals. And yeah, we do, and they were absolutely wanting to do this. So in another fantastic way to deal with this, our Department of Children and Families stepped up, said, absolutely, when we deploy, you know, when we deploy their counselors, we can deploy animal crisis teams at the same time. So that's what the bill does.
And you seem pretty convinced about the benefits of animals and therapies for children, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's so amazing. Anybody that's been a part of it, it warms your heart. I actually was just at an East Haven high school with a program called Mudagrees as opposed to Pedigrees.
Yeah.
So it's rescue dogs, and they bring them into the classroom. This is four-year-olds. And they talk about your feelings and what one doggy thinks of the other doggy and whether the doggy was sad or the doggy told, you know, fibs to the other one. It's just magic. And
yeah.
They start with a puppet because the kids get very excited about the actual dog. The end, they brought in the actual dog, and they were talking to the gal that owned it, said, this is, you know, I love her. She's wonderful. I adopted her because she needed somebody to love her and adopt her. And this little girl sitting next to me tugged on my sleeve and said to me, I'm adopted, and my mommy and daddy love me, too. So, you know, does it get any better than that?
Yeah. You know, one trend we are observing is the growing use of miniature horses as support or therapy animals for a variety of conditions. Do you have any opinion on the trend of using animals other than, say, dogs for this purpose?
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding? You're talking to an equestrian. I have rescue horses, and I work with middle and lower income kids. And therapy horses, the feeling of the child being able to get on a really large animal and be able to feel that animal move, to be able to turn the animal, to stop the animal, and in this case, the horse, it is, again, you know, I'm overusing the word, but it's magic. It's incredible. And the miniature horses, have you ever interacted with them? I mean, they are the cutest, most adorable. It's like a stuffed animal. And, the children are just engaged immediately.
Representative Diana Urban from Connecticut, thank you so much for sharing this wonderful legislation and all of your bills that you're trying to introduce in your state on our show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for covering it.
Don't go away. When we return, we're going to speak to Eric Mills about what's happening in California at the State Fair this year.
Hopping and a popping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street look to where the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Robin, robin, tweet.
This is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of important issues concerning the welfare of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in our society. From whale protectors on the open seas, to lawyers in court, to scouts helping their local shelter, join me to get the latest on animal welfare news, stories, and events from around the world. And visit us on Facebook to join the conversation. That's Animals Today every week right here on the station, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, make sure to visit us at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to any of our previous shows free. Animals Today brings you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics. Much of our support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And thanks for listening. Welcome back to Animals Today. The 2013 California State Fair will be taking place later this summer outside of Sacramento, and as usual, there will be a healthy dose of animal abuse and cruelty related to the livestock shows and competitions. I want to now welcome Eric Mills, Director of Action for Animals, to the show. Welcome, Eric.
Hello, Lori. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
Eric, you recently wrote a letter to the editor that was published in many California newspapers concerning the use of gestation crates. Eric, what did you write in your letter?
Well, everybody probably knows, remember Proposition 2, which goes into effect in 2 years, which will ban gestation crates throughout California. Meanwhile, though, the California State Fair, I've been going, God, for about 7 years now, I guess, they have a display in the animal nursery, which contains three pregnant sows imprisoned, basically, I think, in what they call farrowing crates. And they're kept in there for 3.5 weeks, unable to turn around, barely able to move, forced to give birth on a metal grid with nightly fireworks, gawking crowds, bright lights. And I told the folks in charge, I said, if you did that to a dog, they would put you in jail. What is the difference, pray? Well, we raised a lot of cane about this in the last couple of years, and then I went to a meeting, what, maybe 10 days ago, of the Fair's Livestock and Animal Care Committee, which is comprised of 11 people, 10 of whom are all involved in animal exploitation. The chair of the committee represents Monsanto Corporations for six western states. They have the rodeo cowboys, the thoroughbred horse racing, the poultry producers, the egg producers, the lamb, beef. It's basically the fox in the hen house. And this committee, in its wisdom, voted 5-0 to continue the farrowing crates this year, but with the stipulation that they would have a public opinion survey if indeed they had the manpower and the money to do that. So when I spoke, I said, don't waste your money. The public opinion has already come in. I was there at the fair last year and collected about 1,500 signatures in support of the ban, which was most interesting to me. I had color blow-ups of the exhibits, and almost all the black folks that I showed this thing to, I said, what is your first impression? And they said, slavery. Indeed, and I tend to agree. So I think there's some hope this year, though. We have a brand-new CEO, a fellow named Rick Pickering, who last year was the CEO of Alameda County Fair, here where I live. We go way back. And Mr. Pickering's a decent sort. We also have a new chairman of the board, Willie Pelote, who said he's from Georgia, and he has eaten his share of pork and raccoon and possum over the years, but he wants the animals raised humanely. So the fair has gotten close to 2,000 letters and emails of concern, had about 1,000 petition signatures that Animal Place did, plus the 1,500 that I did. I said that the jury is back, the verdict is in. Guilty. These crates simply have to go. Now, what I find most intriguing, just last week I sent out a request for letters to the various animal protection organizations around the state, animal welfare, and got 14 letters in response, including the State Humane Association, Animal Legal Defense Fund, Humane Farming Association, Marin Humane Society, Oakland East Bay, SPCA, major folks. But the most interesting one was a letter from the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which says there's a penal code, 597T, which stipulates that any animal confined has to have room to exercise. And so they sued a pork-producing company back in Tulare County 3 years ago and closed the place down. So the state fair is breaking the law now when it does this. I hope they're going to do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do. But if not, I'm going to take them to court. But it shouldn't have to come to that. I think there's a lot of public support for this. And as you noted, the fair starts July 12th, runs to the 28th, and the fair board has one more meeting on May 31st before that time. That's a Friday at 12:30. I would love to be able to pack that hearing room with 50 to 100 people in support of the animals, because there's major support for this issue. I think the publicity that your program is going to give it might help things move along.
Eric, and I just want to clarify with you, to my listeners, these are pregnant sows time to give birth during the fair, right?
Yes, it's for show and tell. And they say it's educational, and that's what the public wants. And as I pointed out, I said a number of major states in this country, including Texas, the biggest meat producer in the country, does not allow these exhibits. Neither does New Mexico or Colorado or Oregon. I said if people want to see the miracle of birth, then it should be done off camera, like an off-site web. Every veterinary study I've seen, including those from University of California, Davis, which oversees and takes care of this exhibit, says do not transport pregnant animals about to give birth. It is traumatic for all concerned. And I told the fair board, I said, what are you going to do if a sow dies during birth or gives birth to deformed and dead piglets and freaks out the children? How are you going to explain that? Remember back in, when was that, 2003 years ago, that cow that got loosed from her handlers, a 1,400-pound Holstein, due to give birth the next day at the fair. And she escaped her handlers, and she was ambling through the fair. She was not running. I saw the video. And they captured her, and then she got loose again. And the attending veterinarian from UC Davis announced that she was a nutcase and ordered her shot. And they shot that poor cow to death.
Wow.
Excuse me. Shot her 11 times, killed her and her unborn calf. She was due to deliver birth the next day. I wrote a letter to the vet board. I said there may have been a nutcase present, but the cow was not one of them. Isn't that
That's
extraordinary
good.
That a veterinarian could do that? And
it's,
the poor cow
absolutely...
is looking for a quiet place to give birth.
Yeah.
Going back to those poor sows, in normal conditions, they would find a quiet, secluded spot and build a nest for their babies. They're forced to do it on call. 2 years ago, you could stick your arm right up the birth canal if you wanted. They were right there. This is animal abuse, pure and
interior. Absolutely. Well, then, Eric, what alternatives do you see to the use of these farrowing crates? And why not just oppose the display of all animals at state fairs?
Indeed. Here's the wonderful news. We have a new CEO, Norbert Bartosik, retired about 3 months ago, and the new man is named Rick Pickering. We go way back. Mr. Pickering, 3 months ago, was the CEO and general manager of the Alameda County Fair. And their fair last year, that's my hometown, almost not far from Oakland and Pleasanton, I went to the fair on opening day last year. They had an animal nursery. They had a large pen, maybe 10 by 20 feet, in deep sawdust, with a hog there, free to run loose. Her piglets were born off-site and then brought to the fair when they were about probably 8 weeks old. They have a partition across one corner of the pen with a heat lamp so the piglets can go through the partition. It's got flats back and forth. Once there's a heat lamp, go back and have dinner with Mom. She's free to roam. The pigs are happy. The crowd was happy. I was happy. I said, this is the perfect solution. Why not do this? And I took color photos and showed everybody. I said, Mr. Pickering, I said, you are the CEO. You have the authority to do this. You don't need to listen to your agriculture advisory committee, all of whom have vested interest in the abuse and exploitation of animals. Well, they don't see it as abuse, but I certainly do. There's a
Absolutely.
Wonderful line that I put in my letter I got from
right.
one of my
Eric,
yeah.
Eric, we only have a minute. I want you to tell my listeners, who oversees the treatment of animals at state fairs and the California Fair? And then please tell us, what can people do to express their opinions to the fair board?
Glad you ask. What they should do is write letters to Rick Pickering, P-I-C-K-E-R-I-N-G, and the board of directors in care of the California State Fair. And their address there is 1600 Exposition Boulevard in Sacramento. 1600 Exposition Boulevard, Sacramento 95815. If you want to email, you can do it at calexpoboard@calexpo.com. Those letters would really make a difference. If they can do that soon, as I say, they have one more board meeting. You might put a note in there, too. The fair is still giving away goldfish as prizes, most of which will be dead before they hit the parking lot. Hermit crabs as pets. They're all taken from the wild. Many of these animals will be flushed down the toilet. 2 years ago, they were serving raccoon on a stick, if you can believe it, and the meat came from fur farms out of state, a fellow named Jungle George. Well, they didn't do that last year because we raised so much hell over it. So public pressure is going to make a difference. People should also contact their state legislators, all of whom can be written in care of the state capitol, Sacramento 95814. That would make a difference, too. But public pressure is going to help these animals, I think. I want to be able to advertise the California State Fair as the most humane in the country. This is not rocket science. This is real easy to do.
Yeah. Eric, thank you so much. We'll repeat the address and the email address that you gave on the show later. So thank you very much for telling us about what's going on at the California State Fair. Eric Mills with Action for Animals. Don't go away. News with Peter next.
Seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dr. Lori Krishner. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Lori. How are you?
Yeah, it's interesting to learn what's going on right here in our backyards, huh? From Eric.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I'd want to witness any of this.
I know. You know, this is stuff you witness just in nature. Let them do their thing. You don't need to bring animals and exploit them at a silly fair. But it's great he's getting all the support, isn't it?
Yes.
And I do want to repeat the address that he gave if you want to write your concerns about how they treat the animals at the California State Fair coming up. It's coming up very soon, so let's get on this right away. It's attention to Rick Pickering, Board of Directors, and 1600 Exposition Boulevard in Sacramento, 95815. What's in the news, Peter?
I can't resist giving you the latest Bieber update.
Bieber, oh no. We talk about this guy too much.
It looks like the story is finally finishing.
Okay.
He was forced to give up his capuchin monkey in Munich. And
what happened to the monkey?
The monkey is probably going to go to a sanctuary.
Okay.
And the monkey probably will be fine, although, you know, removed from his mommy at a very young age,
right.
You know, but so that's he was unable to even bring the monkey home. That's the latest twist on this story that they're claiming. I think
right.
This is a PR deal,
right?
That in California and Georgia, where he has his homes, he's not allowed to have private own a monkey as a pet,
right?
But really, he never had the right paperwork to get it in and out of Munich,
right?
And,
how ignorant to think, yeah, let's just take my monkey.
You know, this guy lives in a Hollywood bubble.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even realize what's going on.
Yeah.
Say. You ever been to the Mall of America?
No.
The Mall of America is in Minnesota.
Oh.
It's the biggest indoor mall in the country, maybe the world. I don't know. anyway, they've got lots of live plants in this huge structure. You know, they're sort of frozen for a long, many months up there in Bloomington. So they've got to make this huge indoor structure. And the aphids are eating the plants, ruining the trees.
So what are they doing?
They're releasing 72,000 ladybugs to sort of even out the playing field. And so if you get a ladybug in your
hair,
veggie burger,
food,
you will know that it didn't just fly in there accidentally.
They're flying all around you.
A little war going on in Mall of America.
Wow.
So that'd be nice to visit that place sometime.
Yeah, we'll wait till all the bugs leave.
You know, apparently they get their heating from a solar system. They use a passive solar heating system.
Oh.
Which is incredible considering how frozen that place is.
I don't know
how they do that.
Yeah, and how large that is. Wow.
In Milan, Italy, a pharmacology research center was broken into, and hundreds of animals were freed by protesters, animal activists. The researchers are complaining that they've set back their research for Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, and dementia years.
Years.
And
forever.
Forever.
Look what these animal people did.
So what do you think about that? You know, I want your opinion on this, that these activists, they obviously broke the law, released about 100 of the animals that they had released mostly mice. And then, I mean, the mice are not going to live very long once they're out and about, right? I mean,
that's not the point.
Okay, what's the point? Explain to me your position on whether these protesters are right or wrong.
Would I personally do this act? No. Mm-hmm. But listen, they're doing it, and good for them.
What other laws do you like to ignore? Since we're talking about breaking the law, you're okay with it.
I'll tell you when we're off the air. Okay. You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm, I really don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you,
You think it's...
I think it's not that productive in the long scheme. I understand the anger and the need to make a point.
Yeah.
Get attention, draw attention to your group, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think in the long run, you just got to follow the law. That's what I think. But I don't know.
Yeah. I think it depends on, we need to know the history and what sort of animals are in the research center and what are they doing to them and what efforts been made by animal advocates and if they've been reasonable or not.
Yeah.
And I think there's too many unanswered questions for me to just give you an answer on one specific case.
Okay.
But I'm glad the mice are free. What can I say?
In Montana, let's go back to Montana.
Okay.
Now. There was a bear breeding facility called Animals of Montana, and they would train captive-bred animals for films. Well, one of their employees was mauled and killed by one of their grizzlies, this guy Benjamin Cloutier. He apparently did not adequately protect himself from the bears when he was in there cleaning his cages, and $9,000 in fines have been proposed by the U.S. Labor Department for safety violations against this facility. So that's the penalty, $9,000 for not adequately protecting their employee against these bears.
Wow.
So there you go. I could only hope that a large civil lawsuit will follow with the family going after this business.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have repeatedly stated on the show how much we just oppose these raising these animals for use of entertainment.
Yeah.
It's just this is a situation where the animal advocates should break in and let these bears go, right?
No, I'm not even going there.
Oh, come on.
You're just laying it out
Admit
there
it.
For me.
Admit it. You want to see
I'll tell you a different story that really gets me excited.
Okay.
And that is a Pennsylvania man is going to have to stand trial because he shot a deer in a Walmart parking lot. So in Pennsylvania, a guy who's not even a licensed hunter saw a deer and pulled out his gun and started shooting at this
That's animal. Terrible.
In right in there. So
in Pennsylvania, can you carry a weapon in your car?
I don't think you could. I think the main question is, can you shoot a deer
in public. Of course not.
In a residential
area.
No,
of course not.
So the judge is ordering the trial to go ahead. The defense attorney claimed that the charge was unwarranted because he couldn't have known there were any workers in the area or something nonsense like that.
Ridiculous.
It's going to trial. And to me, the main point is that I think some people just can't resist the urge to try to kill a deer when they see it.
Kill any living creature when they see it.
It's almost like
a
reflex that they cannot suppress.
I know. Well, thank you, Peter.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.